Hello, everyone. Welcome back to I See What You're Saying, the Disciplined Listening Podcast. I'm Michael Reddington, and today it is my pleasure to welcome our next guest, Paula White. Paula leveraged all of her experience and expertise that she learned along the way while leading multi-million dollar sales teams to start her own organization, Plan B Consulting. Paula works to integrate her love of music with her passion for teaching and coaching to work with leaders to evolve their listening and communication skills. She is the creator of the Conscious Communication Framework and author of the book, Side B. When I was first introduced to Paula, I was really fascinated with how she integrates her love of music and how she sees and experiences and listens to music and how she teaches us all to be better communicators. I thought it was a great approach, and I'm really happy to talk with her more about it today. So during our conversation, we are going to discuss, among other things, her four zones of listening. How do we recognize both our side A and side B leadership skills? Some of you might remember vinyl LPs, side A, side B. How do we recognize what they are and how do we leverage them during our conversations? She's going to dive into some of the most important, or I should say dangerous, of her listening blockers and her 10 legacy behaviors that we all have the opportunity to develop as well. It's a great conversation. She shares lots of wonderful insights, and I'm really excited to share it with you all today. Thank you for being here. And while you're here, please take a moment to like the show, share the show, subscribe to the show. We really do appreciate the support. And speaking of support, check out the show notes where you can find our sponsors. Head over to humantel.com. That's where you can enter the code INQUASIVE25 for 25% off the best-in-class, scientifically-backed training to recognize shifts in emotion through changes in facial expressions and nonverbal behavior. Professional interviewers can head over to certifiedinterviewer.com to learn not just what you can get from, but also what you can contribute to the International Association of Interviewers, along with getting all your questions answered for the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation. And you can, while you're online, you can head over to inquasive.com. And that's where you can learn more about the programs our clients ask us to customize for our clients, senior leaders, sales teams, and HR teams to teach them how to unlock the truth in all of their high-value conversations. We appreciate you being here. Let's get right after it. So without further ado, I introduce to you Paula White. Paula, it is so great to see you. Thank you very much for taking the time to be here today. How are you?
Oh, Michael, I am so fantastic. It couldn't be a better day. The birds are still singing and the clouds are in the sky.
Well, every day we're on this side, we're vertical. It's a good day to be here. So I appreciate you stepping off of a cruise ship for this conversation. A couple of years back, I was like in the spur of a moment asked to sort of MC introduce a few bands at like a local town thing. Like it was no big deal. It was one of these like free, whoever's in town, come see the band on a Friday night kind of thing. I didn't know anything about the band. They literally who can go out here and introduce them? And I happened to be standing there. So they handed me a microphone and I went and did it. So I was trying to think about a way to fire up like the crowd and get people interested. So I lied. it was a country band, and it's like my welcome. I was like, I just want to welcome them. For those of you that don't know, they just came off of a cruise with, and I listed all of these bands that, you know, they don't know, like whatever. But now people were listening, and so that we had their attention. But you really did just step off of a cruise. So glad you made it back safe and had a great time, and I'm appreciative of this conversation. And when we were first introduced, I was just immediately captivated and curious with your approach to associating listening and leadership with music. So for people who really know me, they know that music has played an instrumental part in my life, that it's kind of how I deal with myself and deal with the world and all of these places. Who knows? You know, people say, you know, different things have saved my life. You know, outside of my family, like music is there, like with the impact it's had on my life. I can't sing, I can't play any instruments, but I probably couldn't live without music. So to hear your approach, just I was struck right away, and I'm really excited to have this conversation. So to kick it off, I wanted to ask you about a line that I read that you had wrote. And if I get it correctly, I believe, and correct me on anything I screw up, of course, I believe that you wrote, how we listen to music mirrors how we listen to people. I would love it if you could start off by unpacking that thought for us.
Well, first of all, I want to tell you, in your opening, when you said music is instrumental, or that listening is instrumental, you've really tied in music right away. But yes, the way we listen to people is the way we listen, it mirrors the way we listen to music. So here it is we have a mindset around music that we have nostalgia. We know the lyrics that are going to be there. We listen to songs over and over and over again. We ignore the ones that we don't want to listen to. Now, put that all in the same genre of listening to people. We don't listen to people that we don't want to listen to. We play and we talk to the people that we want to hear, and the topics that we are so passionate about, we'll listen to over and over and over again. We listen to people talking to us if it's interesting to us. Nostalgia. We've been there. We've done that. We can help people. It all mirrors that those layers of listening to the layers of music. So we can start with the lyrics, add the beat, we can add the rhythm, we can add the harmony. And really, when we do this in a way that musicians create their songs, if we can train our minds to listen in the same way to people, it's amazing the magic that happens.
I love that. And I really do. And again, I'm a nerd. Like for music, there was a large swath of my formative years where if you couldn't find me, I was probably by myself, blissfully ignoring the rest of the world in Newbery Comics for hours. And then taking the CDs that I just bought and listening to them in my Discman, in my Ford Escort before I left and went anywhere. Anybody from New England is hopefully laughing at the Newbery Comic reference. And anybody from the 90s is hopefully laughing at the Ford Escort reference. So I love how you put all that together. And I feel like there is so much there. Like, who do we turn our attention to? How easily? How frequently? How does it make us feel? All of those things that music does. And when I was listening, and I'd love your thoughts on this, to what you said, I also feel like there's a flip side to that coin. So if we listen to people like we listen to music, then as communicators, as speakers, we can likely capitalize on some of those same pieces in order to captivate people's attention. And then you speak a lot as well. So whether it is varying our volume, varying our speed, our tone, our pauses, even using turn of phrase, how we put words together, how we describe, just like you would in a song. For me, even sometimes there's song lyrics that sneak out into my presentations that nobody else would know. But I just love that turn of phrase. You know, I start leaning one way and then come back the other to grab somebody's attention. So I'm curious to your thoughts on that, knowing that we can listen to people potentially like we listen to music. How can we capitalize on that as speakers in order to make sure that we're getting as much of our audience's attention as possible while we're connecting with them?
You know, that's a great point, Michael. When we're speaking and we're holding a conversation, we want to be that song that they listen to. We want to be that rhythm, that beat, that harmony. So our lyrics that we say need to have incorporated those layers. If we don't incorporate those layers into our conversations or into our speaking events, then unfortunately, we're going to just be a dull monotone song that maybe is a one-hit wonder for a moment, and then you're out the door, right? So we really need to understand that when we're preparing to speak to people, we've got to add in beats. We've got to add in some layers. We've got to add in some musical rhythm to it so that it keeps the attention. Being dyslexic, as we talked about before, being dyslexic, and this was way before dyslexia was a thing that people really talked about, I used music to study. I used music to pass my test. and to talk to people because I would talk in a rhythm and my tone would be very rhythmic. So we could do that as speakers as well.
It's another great point. And I had other things, not dyslexia, but other things I was dealing with. And sometimes even to maintain focus while studying, I would do the same thing. And I think it was my dad that oddly gave me this idea. He's given me lots of great ideas, but I'm going to attribute this one to him, which would be kind of odd because I don't think he listened to music as much as I did. But by using music to study, when I was taking the test, by recalling the songs, I could then do a better job putting myself back in the mental and emotional state I was when I was studying, which therefore made it easier to recall the information and hopefully pass a couple tests once in a while.
Hopefully was always the key.
Yeah. Pass a few of them, enough to at least graduate and figure out what to do next. So right. Again, I'm fascinated by the perspective there, and I'm sure you run into it too. There's lots of people that approach listening or communication or whatever it is from different angles. But you were the first person I talked to that really dove into this whole correlation to music, and I love it. So you have in your book, is it the four zones of listening? Did I say that right?
Yep, you sure did, because we zone in and zone out.
I had a conversation with Graham Bode not too long ago. And I was so thrilled when he told me that in their research, they found that even the best listeners zone out roughly 25% of the time in conversations. I was like, oh, thank you so much. Like, now I feel better because I absolutely do zone out. There's no two ways around it. So you gave me a little bit of self-esteem back with that statistic, Graham. I appreciate it. But I would be grateful if you could please walk us through in as much detail as you want, go in any direction as you want. But if you could please walk us through your four zones of listening.
Absolutely. So when we were growing up, we were taught, this is how we were taught to listen. Listen to your parents, listen to the police, listen to the people, listen to your elders, your teachers, those were the words that were used to teach us to listen. I don't think we've ever really been taught a framework around listening. And so the four zones is a framework that I put together with a neuroscientist and a psychologist and some musicians so that I could get this all put together. So the first zone is the background zone. And I equate this to elevator music. You know, when you go into the elevator, you're hearing just the music if you're even paying attention to it. Right. So the background is like when I talked about this morning, the birds are chirping, things that we may miss. But that zone is specifically for listening to yourself. That zone is for you to get your focus on, to get your work done, and really not participate with other people. And I understood this to be because I was working and really focused in on doing some work for the listening. And my son's coming in and talking to me. And I would say, that's nice. And he goes, Mom, you're not listening. And I said, why do you say that? And he said, because when you do, then you have a canned response. So I'm going to challenge your listeners to find out what their canned response is when they're in the background zone, when they're focused on themselves. Do you know what yours is, Michael?
I've got several. I'm taking notes. Instead of writing response, I just wrote several. So there we are for multitasking right there. I've got several. I've got kind of a funny story for one. Years and years and years ago, I was camping with a family and the husband and wife that we were with had a bit of an argument, and the wife went into the tent and the husband stayed out by the fire and I stayed with him. And he was kind of explaining his side. It wasn't bad. It was just lover's quarrel, whatever. So he's explaining his side of the whole thing to me. And then he says to me, you know, do you understand? And I said, absolutely. And he looked at me and he said, do you really understand? And I said, yeah, absolutely. He says, but you always say absolutely. I was like, oh, well, I actually mean it this time. So let me backtrack. So that's one. But the funny one is the person that I talk to the most in this world by a landslide is my wife. And that is both in person and on the phone. Like if you were to look at my phone records, there's 27 calls to my wife versus one to everybody else combined. Like that's that she's, I'm not a super social person. She's the person I talk to the most. Condolences to her, of course. So sometimes when I slip into that zone, if you will, with other people, I go to give a canned answer that I would give to my, like, because I'm used to talking to my wife. So it's not necessarily a canned answer to her, but it's something common that we would say. And maybe who did I do this with? I'm going to have to try to remember who I did this with. But I had an awkward moment with a woman on the phone and it was somebody that I knew. Why can't I freaking remember who it was? But at the end of the conversation, because I was multitasking and I'm talking to a woman, I said, I love you. And as soon as the words left my mouth, I was like, oh, shit. And I start apologizing and she laughs. She's like, no, it's fine. I get it. I'm like, the only other woman I speak with is my wife. So I just, it was just habit, you know, whatever. And so, yeah. So those are a couple.
That's funny. So each zone has their positive and negative. So background, focus, you know, individual, it's meant for you. Negative, don't bring anyone into this because you will have a canned response. And I'm just going to go at a high level because I go into these very, very deeply in my workshops. The second zone is what I call the reflective zone. So think of those songs when you were on a hot summer day back in, you said the 90s, or back when you were sitting by the pool. What is that song that takes you back to that moment that's very nostalgic? And that is what the reflective zone is about. When people are talking, if we find ourselves going back in time to a, I've been there, done that, then we need to step right back up into the conversation because what we're missing is their point of view from the problem. And I call this reflective zone the problem-solving zone as well, is because we're there to help someone solve a problem and not give them our experience of a problem. So we really need to, we find ourselves going back in time, been there, done that, do this, rather than listening to see what they have done.
That's such a great point. And I've been as guilty of that as anybody, where we feel like we're being helpful. We feel like we're giving advice or insight. And really it's, oh yeah, I had the same thing once and here's what I did. And clearly I'm a genius and handled it the perfect way. So you should do it the exact same way I did, even though there's significant contextual differences. So that's a great point.
Yeah. So that's the nostalgic and then the active listening zone I equate to your playlist, right? You have something on your playlist. You want to listen to it. You go to it all the time. This is the most popular zone that we're all familiar with, right? We've been taught to listen with empathy, listen with understanding, listen, active listening is all of this. But we still hold biases. We still hold biases when we're talking to people. So the active zone is when we're present, but we're not fully present. We can still have a bias. We still have one of the 15 listening blockers that I have. We're thinking of other things. We're thinking of the grocery store we need to go to after work because, you know, somebody we've skipped on our playlist to the next song. We want people to move right along, right? And then the fourth zone is what we have come up with here, and it's the conscious listening zone. This is where there are no biases, no listening blockers, and we are 100% fully present. Now, we cannot do this all the time. It is next to impossible. But this is where we hear a new song by our favorite artist, and we are 100% engaged. We want to hear every moment of that song. And like when we're at a concert, we want to be fully engaged with the band. So this conscious listening zone is really great for creative moments, for brainstorming, for critical conversations, for negotiations. Those are the kinds of places that you want to use this conscious listening zone. And I tried this at one of my speaking events, and it was really amazing. I put on a song, and I asked people to listen for as many instruments as they could count. And then I went around and told a story. Nobody heard my story. They all gave a number of instruments. So they were fully present with that song. And that's how we can practice that conscious listening.
I like that. I like that a lot, especially when you talk about picking out the instruments, the amount of focus and detail that it takes. I'm trying to think about how long I've been really into music, but at some point I became really good friends with a couple of guys who played guitar, and just hanging out with them and listening to them play guitar and talking to them about how they listen to music really got, because one of the questions I asked them was like, so you and I are listening to the same song. So right now I'm listening for the beat, I'm listening for the pace, I'm listening for changes, I'm listening for the lyrics, like I'm getting the emotional connection to this. But like, when you listen to this, are you listening in meter? Like, are you listening to the notes? Like, are you listening to the key? Like, is it different for you? And we talked, you know, it depends on the song and the mood and, you know, whatever, all those other things that they were talking about. But it got me to start picking out, okay, well, there's the bass track and there's the drum. Okay, that's the hi-hat. They've got two guitar players in the band, but where's that extra sound coming from? Did they layer that in after? So some, you know, it kind of got me there, but you're right. The amount of focus that it takes to do that, you have to put everything else aside and to listen to somebody without judgment and to try to allow ourselves to be surprised and learn something new requires us to get to that level, but it takes so much energy, which I think is probably the most frequent excuse people use not to do it. Like, I don't have the time. I don't have the energy. It's too hard work. Well, then you don't get the reward.
You don't get the reward, and people don't understand how to do it. So we've got to teach people how to get into that frame, that mindset, that frame of mind to be fully present. Because when you're not, you're missing out on so much content and emotion and really connectedness. And if we think about this in a sense of business, think of when customers call into customer service, and customer service is, oh yeah, I can fix that, da 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 da, or no, that's not our policy. It's very generic, but if we actually go into the fact of listening to them like we're listening to a lyric, our customers, what the reward is for our customers, and then where are they going to recommend, and where are they going to continue to buy from?
Yeah, great points. So you mentioned we've got to teach people how to get there.
Right.
We've got a short conversation. I know it's a terribly nuanced and in-depth process, but from your perspective, what are some of the highlights for how we can teach people to get to that conscious listening zone?
Well, first thing is we've got to listen, and Stephen Covey says this, we've got to listen from a place of understanding, right? And if we can listen from a place of understanding, then what we're doing is we're putting ourselves into their position, right? Into their shoes. We've got to get rid of all the noise, the chatter in our head, the noise that's surrounding us. And we also need to get rid of everything that is mentally blocking us. Our next appointment's coming up at 1 o'clock. Our this is coming up. You know, we need to just set all that aside. So our environment. So, and then we've got to get into a place of curiosity. So check our environment, curiosity, and a place of understanding. Those are the three places I would say to first start.
All three of those are so critical and so spot on. All too many times, especially leaders who are busy, have conversations at a time that's convenient for them or least inconvenient for them, either at whatever environment they find themselves in or whatever environment is convenient to them, not the person that they're actually speaking with. They're not focused on the conversation. They're focused on trying to end this conversation to get somewhere else, which is entirely different. Time is the enemy of empathy. You can't do those two things at the same time. So all very critical points. If somebody else has information and we need it, they're in control of this conversation and we need to create the experience that they require to get the results that we need. And I think I heard you say before that there are, in your research, you found 15 listening blockers that can stop
listening blockers
all of that from happening. So yeah. I won't ask you to go through all 15 unless you'd really love to, then fire away. But when you look at your 15 listening blockers, what are some of the most common or the most dangerous that we run into?
The most dangerous and the most common, you just said one, judgment, right? We're judging people. The other one is our biases. Our biases hold us back, whether we feel like we can't speak to this person because we don't like the tone of their voice, right? Something along those lines. The other one is we're preparing what we're saying. We're consciously preparing what we're saying and not being open to listening. So we're in our own head trying to defend or protect an opinion of our own, right? Another one is that we tend to zone out. And we talked about this at the very top of it. You said even the best listeners zone out 25% of the time, I believe the study was,
right? Yeah, that's what I was looking at.
25% of the time. So we do zone out. We've got to find our trigger to get back in, right? So those are just some of the high-level listening blockers. There are so many more. There are ones that we tend to do all the time, and that's not pay attention.
I'm sorry, right? I couldn't resist.
We try to hear, but we're thinking of something else. I'm trying to go down the list of the very best of the best ones. I think one of the really, really good listening blockers that we can really focus on is our own energy. When our energy is low, we tend to not listen. And you said it best. We're trying to get to the end of the conversation.
You know, once upon a time, I worked with a gentleman who would frequently say, tell me how the story ends and I'll tell you if I want to hear the story.
Yeah.
Which sounded like catchy and cool. And then when you start to think about it, like, I'm not sure anybody's really invested in this conversation, relationship, the whole package. And your references to our internal monologue are so spot on because we can only listen to one conversation at a time and our voice is going to win every time. And that's attached to our expectations and our emotions and all of those things. So if we can't tie the conversation to an outcome that somehow involves either the initiative or the relationship or both, depending on the situation, like, I think, and I don't know how often you run into this, when we teach listening, sometimes there's the concern of like, I have to really like everybody. No, you don't.
No,
you don't have to like anybody as far as I'm concerned, but you have to see enough value in the interaction and what you're trying to achieve together if you don't like them in order, well, either way, but especially if you don't like them, in order to raise your energy. So you will put in the time and the effort and the focus and those types of things. So you mentioned triggering our way back into conversation. So we realize we've lost focus, we've drifted away, we've thought of something else, whatever it is, it happens to all of us. I'm just going to tell myself what happens to all of us so I feel better about when it happens to me. So what are some of the most effective ways you found to trigger ourselves back into the conversation in a productive manner?
So let's we have to understand first and find out what our good trigger is that we have so many, let's say, bites of information and noise and sound coming into our brains that we need to remix it to understand where we want to be and what we need to get from a conversation. Does that make sense?
It does. And I'm just going to dive into this. So when we think about like remixing a song, so maybe right. It was a hit song by somebody at some point, but now we remix it, add different instruments, breakdowns, verse, whatever it is. And now it's almost like a new song. So it sounds like, and correct me where I'm wrong, that if we understand not only what takes us away from conversations, but what can bring us back, then we can remix all of that in order to stay focused longer. So could you give us an example?
Yes. Yeah, so you've got things coming all in. The one thing that I would say is once you start to zone out and you're starting to think of something else as the person is talking about, focus in on their lips. Because once you say you focus in on their lips, you can go, okay, what is it in your head? I need to listen there. The other thing are typical things that you've heard over and over. Take a note, take a drink of water, pause yourself for a moment. But if you find yourself back, the first thing you need to understand is to come up with a statement of, I am so sorry, I apologize, I didn't hear what you said. Could you repeat that? Because once you say that, then you're fully back in. Sometimes it's easy for people when they have a piece of paper in front of them, just a piece of paper. They don't have to write anything down or even your finger. I've noticed that sometimes when I start to zone out, if I just put an X, draw an X with my finger, I'm right back in because it distracts me from my mindset of zoning out and zoning back into X marks the spot. And that's the person that I'm speaking with.
I like that. And regardless of whether making the X or not works for anybody else, I love the illustration that we all have our quirks, our ticks, our mechanisms, our things that work for us. My buddy, I guess I'll use his first name. Maybe he'll listen to this and he'll know that I'm making fun of a little bit. But my buddy Wayne that I used to work with talked that he took a class somewhere and they worked on memory. And he was told that like in order to help remember things, put them someplace. So like he would go to like if his wife was telling him pick up five different things at the grocery store. As he was going through the list, he would like touch his nose and touch his ear and touch his hand. And like that's where he was putting those things. So this one time he and I are out together and he starts touching like his face. I'm like, dude, what the hell are you doing? And he starts laughing and explains the whole thing. But it doesn't matter what works, it just matters that it works and that it works for each individual. I found the, you know, I'm sorry, I missed that. Can you repeat it for me? Works well. But I found in working with some people that they're hesitant to do that in new relationships. Like, I don't want to admit that I just zoned out because I don't want them to think that I don't care. I'm not paying attention. I'm not lazy.
Right.
In those scenarios, we found success with echo questions or parrot questions, whatever somebody wants to call them. So yeah. If you were having a conversation and I zoned out on you, which I promise I'm not doing, then if like I come back in and I hear you say something like in the next 6 weeks, then I just look at you and smile and say, 6 weeks? And then usually what happens is you go a little bit backwards before you start going forwards.
Forward.
Again. Mm-hmm. And just that half a step backwards gets me back in the direction I needed to be. And as you go forwards, I can come up with an intelligent follow-up question, hopefully to fill in any important gaps. And that way, especially in the new relationship, I don't have to be as vulnerable or as open to potential judgment to say, I'm sorry, I missed that one.
That is correct. And you are 100% accurate. And I love the way that you framed that because the way that I would have framed that particular is that's where your curiosity comes in, right? Yeah. You know, ooh, tell me more, you know?
Sure. I like that one too. That one, it's all tools in a toolbox. So
right.
Based on the context of the situation, the relationship, the goals, go to the right one that works at the right time. I absolutely agree with that. And I feel like for me too, trying to stop myself from zoning out is trying to listen for some, like trying to allow myself to be surprised. Like something in here is going to surprise me. So if I feel like I might get surprised, I'm more likely to stay engaged. If I feel like I know how this song ends, I'm more likely to zone out because I've heard it so many times before. It's just naturally playing in my brain.
Right. Or you're on a playlist. Exactly. It's naturally playing. So you just want to go right to the next song.
Yeah.
Yeah. Been there, done that, did that, you know how to work it. That's the nostalgic zone or the reflective zone.
I like the illustration. So to keep the music metaphors going, when you talk about leadership as well, you talk about A side and B side.
Yes, I do.
Talking to somebody who started listening to music on records and then cassette tapes, I actually know what A side and B side is, but I'm going to cough for a second. Hang on. I apologize to everybody. But even going back to like 45s, or I think back in my day, we would call them like the 7-inch singles, where you got a couple songs on the front and a couple songs on the back. Like, generally, as you illustrate in your book, the songs on the front were supposed to be like the hit songs, the popular songs, and the songs on the back were almost filler. Like, we got to give them something else. So maybe this song on the back didn't make the cut. It wasn't on a previous album. We still have it from another recording session. We got to do something with it. So we're going to put it. And you list examples in your book. Some of them actually turned out to be hit songs. Some of them become forgotten. But is your approach to leading, again, I would really appreciate it if you could walk us through your perception of our A side and our B side leadership behaviors.
Absolutely. So for me, I want to call it a double A side, right? Because I think we need both. We need to balance both. Think of your A side, or your side A, as they call it, 1942, when RCA developed the 45, put that out there. Side A was the hit. Side B was the filler. It wasn't until the DJ started flipping the songs over, or the records over, that they termed it the B side. So with your side A as your hit songs, think of that as your resume tools, your negotiation skills, your business acumen, you know, all of those things that you need to have listed on a resume to get looked at, to get ready to go. This is what I'm good at. Flip over to the B side, and those are your communication skills, your people skills, all those ways that we tend to call them soft skills, but they're really the hard skills, in my opinion. Your listening levels, your how you connect and build relationships. You really have to have both if you're going to be successful as a leader. You know, a lot of leaders say, I'm good at this, 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 this is on my resume, this is what I'm great at, but they don't have the people skills. So they lose a lot of their teams. They lose a lot of respect. They lose a lot of trust. They lose a lot of the relationships as they climb the corporate ladder. All of a sudden, they're in the C-suite and no one's knocking at their door. Nobody, people are afraid to speak to them because they have all these A-side skills. We have to have those human skills, our B-side, to be able to balance it so that we can grow relationships, build trust, build respect, have respect, and therefore our results will flourish.
I like that. And as you mentioned, I feel like on those A-side skills, the resume-based skills, those are often the things that are formally taught and incentivized. Yes. So that's where people tend to really focus. But then on the flip side, we're told all the time, you know, EQ is more important than IQ, and your listening is very important. How do you connect with people? How do you make them feel? And all those things are true, but they get deprioritized. My personal belief is because of the lack of formality, the lack of incentivization. We all know people that have reached very high levels of leadership in their career who are terrible listeners, who are average communicators at best, but they have the education, they've put up the numbers, they can say the right things in a social, political setting way. Maybe they are good negotiators in certain situations, and being a good negotiator doesn't necessarily mean you're a good communicator. Those things can be completely separate. So in your experience, how do we help people develop these B-side skills when they're often spoken of, but they lack that incentivization? Is that a real word? I'm just going to go with it now. They're not as incentivized as those A-side skills.
Well, interestingly enough, you say they're not as incentivized, but they are the ones that incentivize our results. So if our results are poor, rather than putting in another goal or another another goal or another workshop on the sales process or the marketing process, rather than doing that, let's start coaching on listening. Let's start coaching on how to hold conversations. And I don't mean negotiations. I think negotiations are amazing, but let's talk about negotiations in conversations and how we listen. Let's talk about, how to do that. And let's hold, how do we communicate? So when I speak of your side B, there are ways that we communicate with people that we don't even know that are inherently within us. Sometimes it comes from a place of curiosity. Sometimes it comes a place from passion. Sometimes it comes from a place of courage. But whatever's inside of us is what we need to focus on. And I relate 10 of these skills to band members, right? So I know I'm going off track here a little bit, but it is so fascinating that if you think of a drummer, think of a drummer's position. They're sitting in the back. What is the goal of the drummer?
Keeping the beat, they're keeping time.
Keeping the beat, keeping time, moving the song forward, right? How does a business person on side A have that forward-thinking approach? How do they complement that with their side B personality? They complement that by being curious. They're a curious thinker if they're a forward thinker.
I like that. And again, years ago, I worked with a group and they were co-leaders of the organization and they referred to themselves as Mr. Today and Mr. Tomorrow. This one guy was far more focused on what are we doing today? And the other guy was kind of more of your visionary. You get him anywhere near a whiteboard and a couple of markers and clear your schedule for the next hour and a half because we're going to be here talking about all these great things that we could be doing down the road. So I feel like that's a great correlation there. So these were your 10 within the legacy-based behaviors. Is that right?
Yeah.
So what are some of the others of these legacy-based behaviors that can be, again, associated with this B-side?
So lead guitarist is passionate. So think of them with their guitar riffs, right? So they're out there riffing their guitar. They're speaking to you through passion. And the vocalist is optimistic. So they take charge of the room. They have the business acumen and they take charge of the room by leading with their songs going back and forth or however they want you to behave as a fan, they're leading that. One of mine is kindness, the harmonica. I lead with kindness. I try to, you know, when you think of the harmonica, you think of this kind noise coming, this kind, gentle sound coming from this with a little bit of edge to it, right? So I remember when I was leading, I would have I led a team of 34 and quite, multi-million dollar sales department, and my leader would come to me and he'd say, Paula, how are you doing this? And I could never give a side A result of how I was accomplishing my goals. I felt like I was making things up. Well, we're doing, we're promos or making calls, the things that he wanted to hear on the side A. But the real reason my team was getting the results was because of the way that I conversed with them in kindness and giving notes to them and understanding what their goals were besides their business career goals, but what were their home goals and how could we obtain that? So it's just a matter of understanding, are you a drummer, a lead guitarist, a harmonica, a congo drummer, which is courage? Think of all of that. or trustworthy or ethical? Do you always speak with ethics in mind?
And so can leaders be multi-instrumentalists?
Yes, absolutely. Your goal is not to be one. Your goal is to be all of them, to live or surround yourself with a full band so that you have different perspectives in the boardroom, right? And that's what I try and tell people. If you've got all drummers in the boardroom, you're missing the beat. Pardon the pun. You're missing the beat. You need to have a vocalist in there. You need to have a lead guitarist, a rhythm guitarist, a bassist, a harmonica, a conga drum, a violinist. You know, I'm looking up at my wall because I have all of them up there. Saxophone, a pianist. All of these relate to a way of the way we communicate with others.
So I've got to ask, what's the saxophone?
You know, the saxophone is gratitude, being gracious, understanding that you provide a safe place for others and that you are deeply grateful for those around you.
Very nice. Very nice. So I'm always intrigued by different perspectives. And selfishly, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to do this, because I could talk to a bunch of people from a bunch of different places with worldviews and experiences and try to put them all together. And I'm sure like you, we meet lots of people who are into listening and communication. They come at it from different angles and perspectives and whatever it might be. How did you come to this realization, alignment? What's the background for how you intertwined music with listening and leadership?
And great question, Michael. So here it is. Back in 2018, I was very, very stressed in sales. And my doctor actually was a little concerned. And he said, okay, just take some time, go do something for yourself. And, you know, you need to do that once in a while. Because I was working probably 12, 14-hour days nonstop. Because as you know, in sales, once you hit a number, great, pat on the back, what are you going to do for me today? Mm-hmm. And then on and on and on. So my favorite band at the time, the Struts, which if you haven't heard the Struts, you need to listen to them. They were playing in Atlanta, and I'm in Columbus, Ohio. So I bought tickets and got beat the VIP experience because I wanted to get front row center stage so I could see them. I could see the guitar. I could feel the beat coming. And so my husband and I flew down there. We got into meeting the band, which was amazing. And I went around the corner to find a seat. Now, granted, I'm 55 at the time. Walked in. It's the mosh pit. You have to stand. I'm like, oh, there's no standing here, honey. What are we going to do? So we ran under the red velvet bar and went upstairs to the balcony and got first row balcony center stage. And I'm singing along wildly off course, of course. And I looked down and there's this brief moment. I looked down and I saw this interaction between the band and the fans. And I couldn't take my mind off of it. It was so captivating to me that I just kept staring. And in my head, I was thinking, why can't leaders get their employees and vice versa to collaborate like that? And it was all about the music. And listening to the music is what made them come together. And that's where this was born.
I think that's great. When you think about the earlier in the conversation, you talked about setting the environment.
Yeah.
And often people in any conversation discount/ignore the impact that an environment has on the entire discourse, on the entire interaction. And when you think about the environment of a live show, everybody's there for a reason.
Yeah.
The band hopefully is there to put on the best show that they can. That's not always true. And Axl Rose might not show up till tomorrow, but hopefully they're there to put on the best show that they can.
Right.
For the crowd, there's a certain amount of people who are there to go nuts, to return that energy equal and in favor. And those people typically are right up front. So it creates that interaction. But because of the environment and because of the expectations and then the common ground that the music creates.
Yeah.
One group is playing it. One group is, I mean, everybody's experiencing it, but one group is playing, one group is listening. Now, when you correlate that to leadership, if we are working hard to cultivate the right environment, if we're making this an interactive shared experience, then there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to replicate that.
That is correct. So we start with the four zones. We start with leaders learning to listen. Then we keep moving on. And this world becomes magically in a place where people matter and conversations matter, and we get off everything that is tech related and start focusing on each other again.
I like it. I like the fresh perspective. I like the outside idea. I like bringing in two things that might in some ways feel completely unrelated and drawing the parallels, creating the metaphors to teach and help people see things differently. And of course, me being the music geek, it just hit right at home for me. So I really appreciate you taking the time. Thank you so much for the conversation. I've been taking notes all along. For people that have been listening and they want to dive into this deeper, they want to explore the metaphors, they really want to start putting this into practice, learn more from you, where do they find you? How do they get a hold of you? How can they learn more?
Perfect. Well, first place to look for me is my website, paulaswhite.com. The second place is LinkedIn. I have a bunch of articles that people can read. It's also on my websites and blogs, but the newer ones are on LinkedIn right now. Paula S. White. And they can email me, pw@paulaswhite.com.
I will make sure to share all of those links, and I'll put links to your books as well in the show notes.
Fabulous. Well, Mike, it has been my pleasure because I love the passion that you have around listening, and I love that you get that the music part of it, and that the way we listen to music is the way we listen to people.
I think as soon as I read that, I was like, okay, I'm in. I got to keep reading. I got to learn more. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you carving out the time. I know you're doing a lot. So thank you for making the time to have this conversation today. I look forward to staying in touch. Thank you so much. Paula, thank you for a great conversation. I appreciate the time that you took to join us today. Thank you for walking us through your perspective and your approaches and helping us approach listening, communication, and leadership from potentially an entirely different viewpoint. And I was really, as a music aficionado, I was really blown away by hearing you talk about how we listen to music mirrors or reflects how we listen to people as well. I thought that was a very important realization for all of us. Honestly, especially myself, when I think about how I get drawn into music, what I pay attention to, what I move past, all of those things was very important. Your talk about going beyond our canned responses, especially with people we talk to often, is a super important point. And moving beyond the background noise, what are we getting distracted by? What are we getting stuck with? What is counterproductive that we need to move past? I really appreciate all that you shared today. Thank you. And thank you to everybody that joined us. Hopefully you got new perspectives and techniques and skills from that conversation as well. I really do appreciate you all taking the time to join us today. And thank you for taking that extra minute to like the show, subscribe, share, and support the show moving forward. We really do appreciate it. Let's also support the sponsors in the show notes. Please check out the links for HumanTel at humantel.com. That's where you can go check out the scientifically backed training to understand what people are likely thinking and feeling by recognizing shifts in their facial expressions and body language. The code INQUASIVE25 will get you 25% off the training of your choice. For the professional interviewers, head over to certifiedinterviewer.com. That's where you'll learn more about the International Association of Interviewers, how you can become more involved with the organization. It's also where you'll get your questions answered for the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation. And while you're online, check out INQUASIVE.com. That's where you'll learn more about the programs our clients ask us to customize for their leadership teams, their sales teams, their HR teams, to teach them how to apply the strategic observation and persuasive communication skills necessary to encourage people to open up and share the everyday confessions that unlock new relationships and outcomes. We appreciate you being here week after week after week. Thank you so very much. Please stay safe, take care of each other, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.